Nuketown Radioactive for Saturday, May 28th, 2005. Well, folks, welcome to the much-delayed Nuketown Radioactive number 7. My name's Ken Newquist, and I'll be your host. I obviously wanted to get one of these out much sooner than now. This is nearly a month after the last podcast, and unfortunately I got sidetracked by a nasty little cold that just kind of hit me very, very freaking hard the first week of May, and I got over it pretty quick, but I had kind of like this lingering cough, and I could just not bring myself to sit down and try and put one of these out when every 5 seconds I felt like this tickle in my throat was just going to make me hack my lungs out. So, you know, thus the delay. With that in mind, I've been trying to think about how to get these out more frequently, what I want to try and do with the podcast. And I think my plan is going to be to try and stick as much as possible to a weekly schedule. Now, that may mean that you put out just like a really short podcast, you know, 10 minutes, just some random thoughts, notes about what's gone up on Nuketown. But what I'm really hoping to do is do a podcast, some thoughts, and a review of a book, if nothing else. I have more than enough books to review that really should have gotten up on Nuketown, that I've been meaning to get up on Nuketown, but just haven't had the time to sit down and write the review. So, this will become the forum for getting those book reviews out. But it's not just book reviews. Coming up in Nuketown Radioactive number 8, I will be doing a review of the Atomic Swindlers' new album, Coming Out Electric. Now, the Atomic Swindlers is a sci-fi rock and roll band, and before you cringe and say, oh, that's not good, I'm not talking about like a really campy one. I'm talking about something that's more like a cross between David Bowie's Ziggy Stardust and I'd say that like the Fifth Element, I think, is the line that I used in the review. If you want to learn about the Atomic Swindlers before Nuketown Radioactive number 8, I do have a plain old text review up on Nuketown right now. I gave the album about 8 out of 10. But what I want to do with the podcast review is something I have been threatening to do for quite a while, which is actually play some tracks from the album and then offer some commentary on it. So that will be number 8, and I'm sincerely hoping to be able to get that out very shortly. There's going to be very little turnaround time between number 7 and number 8 for two reasons. First of all, I've been promising the Swindlers that I would get out the podcast as soon as possible, and that's like been going on for the last 3 weeks. And also, I am a bachelor dad this weekend, folks. My wife is off camping in the Poconos with a friend of hers from Philadelphia, and in theory, as long as they don't get pounded by thunderstorms, they're going to be gone all weekend, so it'll be just me and Jordan, and I'm hoping that as Jordan naps, I will be able to knock out a podcast or three. So, crossing the fingers and hoping against hope that I can actually get a bunch of these done this weekend. Number 9, or maybe number 10, let's just say sometime in the near future, I'm also really hoping to be able to do an audio review of Midnight Syndicate's The 13th Hour, which is a Call of Cthulhu-inspired gaming soundtrack. I haven't actually listened to it yet. I've got it sitting downstairs. It's just waiting and begging for me to play it. And I've got some emails going back and forth with Midnight Syndicate. Hopefully, I will be able to get that review. And again, it'll be more of the same. Either short audio clips, or if I'm lucky, and I'm really hoping for this, to get in a few tracks. You know, not a lot of tracks, obviously. I don't want to give out the whole album over the podcast, but, you know, a representative sample, maybe two of the best or two of the most intriguing ones. So that's stuff to look forward to on the upcoming podcasts. As a freelance reviewer, I get to check out an awful lot of games, either for Nuketown or more often, actually, for sci-fi.com. And one of the things that drives me absolutely bonkers about games, particularly board games, strategy tabletop war games, anything that has a fair amount of rules to it and that are open to interpretation or confusion, one of the things that really bugs me about these kind of games is that almost inevitably they do not have a FAQ. Which, I mean, most people should know, but let's not assume anything. It stands for Frequently Asked Questions. And basically, I mean, the purpose of a normal FAQ, regardless of what your product is to, you know, answer the questions that you think are most likely to come up when someone's using your product. Now, with games, I think the general way that this seems to go is they almost never release the FAQ when the game itself is released. If there is a FAQ, it will usually come out maybe a month after the game has been released, maybe 2 months after the game has been released. And I just don't get this. I don't understand it at all. Because here's where I'm coming from. The game had to have gone through playtesting. I don't care which, I don't care how many iterations of the rules there were. They had to have been playtested. And during the course of playtesting, there must have been questions that came up. Now, changes to the rules may have addressed some of those questions, but I'm going to be willing to bet dollars to donuts that the last time that you run those rules with a group of people that have absolutely no idea how to play the game, they are going to have questions. So I don't understand why companies that are releasing games can't say, okay, well, let's do one last play test with, say, three people, see what kind of questions come up, and then we'll include those in a FAQ. The other thing about a FAQ, and the other role that I think of a FAQ has, is that it portrays the same information that's in the instructions, but in a different way. I think, and this is something that I've seen in a lot of games, and unfortunately it can really hamper gameplay, especially when you've only got, like, when you're a reviewer like me and you only have a short period of time to be able to knock out a review, you know, you're only going to be able to get off maybe three or four sessions, hopefully three or four intensive sessions, but still, you know, it's not like you gradually playing the game over a couple of months. But anyway, not everybody thinks the way you do when you're rewriting the instructions, or whether the game designers did. So what may make complete sense to the game designer isn't necessarily going to make sense to the players they're reading through it. So what the FAQ provides you with is an opportunity to present the rules that you've got in a different way. So, you know, I think some people may sit there and go, but I already explained how to do that in the rules. Well, yes, maybe you did, but if you rephrase it in the FAQ, sometimes you can get a better understanding for what you're trying to do with a rule than what was actually in the instructions. I think FAQs can also come in very helpful with the more obscure rules. Like, let's say, for example, there's a specific movement criteria, or there's an action that can be taken by other players during a move. You know, that's a kind of obscure rule that can tend to get very buried in the instructions. But if you have a FAQ, you can pull out that particular circumstance and, finesse it a little bit and offer a better explanation of exactly what you're supposed to do there. So for me, there is just positively, absolutely no reason why games should not be released with a FAQ. And I think that, you know, you can really increase the value of a game, the playability of a game, by having this FAQ available. I just can't understate this enough. I mean, to the point where I would say that when I do reviews, it may cost a game a point, maybe 2 points, on a scale of 1 to 10, when I can't fully understand how the rules are supposed to go, or if it takes me a long time to find out, is particularly how to play a certain rule out. You don't want to frustrate your players. You certainly don't want to frustrate your reviewers. And I think it can only serve to enhance the game. And in fact, I think that FAQ is probably the number two most important thing that you can do when you're releasing a game. Aside from having a good game with solid rules and good production values, the other big thing that games consistently leave out, and I don't care what the source is, it's an index. And I think I've talked about this somewhat in earlier podcasts, but to me, you know, a good index is worth 2 pages of art. You know, ditch the art, guys. I've seen books that have, you know, a full page illustration and they don't have an index. And, you know, art's beautiful. Art certainly contributes to the overall presentation, but when it comes right down to it, the ability to define something in a book is more important to me than whether or not that book looks particularly pretty. So that's my that's my little spiel on FAQs. I'm very interested to hear what other people think of this. Do you not care? Do you use the FAQs? Are you frustrated like I am? Or is there something else that you think is even more important in the game's presentation? Something that can help even more than having a good FAQ? So I want to hear from you. If you have comments, you can send them to nuketown@gmail.com. So, speaking of books that I've wanted to review for a while and just never got around to on Nuketown, you didn't think I was just going to talk about that and put it off to another podcast, did you? No, I'm actually doing it this podcast, guys. The book review is actually in this podcast. But anyway, one of the books that I wanted to talk about, that I've wanted to talk about, was Gardens of the Moon by Steve Erickson. This was released, I believe it was released last year, by Tor Books. It's a 496-page book. And I would put this into the category of dark fantasy, dark military fantasy. It takes place against the backdrop of an expanding empire called the Malazan Empire. And I apologize in advance if I massacred that, but I think I did pretty good. Anyway, the Malazan Empire has conquered most of the world and is basically looking to grab the few remaining morsels. The characters in the book are caught up in a struggle between the major players in the empire and must fight to avoid the corruption, treason, and murder that this conflict is spawning. It's got one of the things I really liked about it was it's got a really unique magic system, or at least I have to admit I haven't read a tremendous amount of fantasy, but I'm trying to branch out. But anyway, there's a very unique magic system in which wizards draw their power from warrens, which I don't fully understand, but I take are something like specialized magic-generating demiplanes, separated from our reality. It's kind of like a reserve that they can pull on in order to produce their spells. The power, strength, and nature of each warren is very different, so some of them might be oriented more towards healing, some of them might be more oriented towards intrigue. And the other cool thing about it, which, you know, I've been on, as you know from probably listening to the earlier podcasts, I've been on something of a Robert E. Howard kick lately. And the magic in this tends to be reminiscent of the Conan books. It's dark. It's demanding. You don't use magic unless you're willing to pay the price. It is definitely a far cry from the "I cast magic missile" type we see in a lot of just your really generic fantasy. And, of course, Dungeons & Dragons. It reminds me heavily of military science fiction. It's probably the closest thing I've seen to military fantasy in that much of the narrative involves a group of military engineers known as the Bridge Burners, who are hated and feared by many in the Empire because they're just, well, they're just so damn good. And they have various allegiances that go back to the very dawn of the Empire. And, you know, as a result, when you're the best of the best and there's all kinds of factions striving for power, they're either going to want to try and control you, or they're going to try and destroy you. And in this book, it seems to be a tendency to do the latter. Now, it's an engaging book. I enjoyed it. It's a very interesting read. It's different from a lot of what I've read before, but it's also infuriating. Erikson regularly restarts his narrative from a different perspective and a different time, while simultaneously dumping tremendous amounts of character, world, and plot information on the reader. I found it very hard to get my bearings and to stay connected to the book because of that. I really would have preferred it if he'd been more focused. You know, it's very telling that this book begins with a glossary of people and places. You know, a lot of fantasy books, they'll have that index, but they'll put it at the end. This book, you know, the glossary is there, and when I saw it, I thought, this is not a good sign, because if the book is so complicated that you need to be able to have that quick reference, that's just not a good, sign. And, you know, the thing is this book, I mean, it restarted like 3 times in the course of, I don't know, like 50 pages. I mean, we start off with the main character and we see him in his original, like when he's a kid, and then we see him when he first gets introduced to the Empire, and then we see him when he gets assigned to his first command, and then there's a couple of other miscellaneous characters that are introduced along the way. And to tell you the truth, and part of this is probably coming from my perspective being a geek dad who doesn't have a lot of time to read conventional books. And yes, folks, I did actually read this. This wasn't an audiobook. You know, it's hard for me to, you know, when I'm only reading for like 15 minutes or 20 minutes or maybe a half an hour a night, it can be kind of hard to jump back into that book. And having this many restarts, having, you know, you find a character that you like and all of a sudden that character's gone and you jump on, it's just annoying, really, more than anything else. And it's distracting. I mean, I'll tell you the truth. I'm about 2/3 of the way through the book now, and I still haven't finished it. And I've been reading this damn thing for like a year. The thing is, it's good enough that I keep coming back to it. I really do want to finish it. But, you know, tighten it up, man. At least offer, more narrative. Offer more of a narrative from a certain perspective in a bigger chunks. You know, let me really dig my mental claws into a character before you jump on down the timeline again. I mean, it's not that I don't mind large, complicated stories with lots of plot threads. I mean, I love George R.R. Martin's A Song of Fire and Ice. But this is just too much too fast. So overall, I think it's, you know, if you're into, if you'd like to read something that's really militaristic fantasy, and by that I mean it's from a military perspective, it's very intense, it's not glossing over combat, it's not glossing over the nature of a fight or, you know, actually using magic in the battlefield, like you would kind of see in Robert Jordan's books. I mean, he writes a good battle scene, but, you know, it's just not as brutal as I would expect a real war to be. And this book does that. So if you're interested in a military fantasy kind of book, I would definitely check it out. If you have an attention span that's longer than 5 seconds. in other words, if you're not a geek mom or dad, I would also check it out. And if you're just looking for something different from a fantasy perspective, I think it's worth checking out. Having said that, my rating for this would be 7 out of 10. Well, folks, that's it for this edition of Nuketown Radioactive. I haven't actually compiled this down yet, so I don't know how long it is, but I get the sense that it's a little shorter than it normally is. I'm always looking for comments for Radioactive, and I know you guys are out there because I can see the downloads increasing. So if you have comments, send them to nuketown@gmail.com. I'm always looking for, you know, audio comments, regular comments, whatever your thoughts are on the podcast, I'd love to hear them. And once again, next time on the podcast, the music of the Atomic Swindlers and a giveaway contest. That's right, folks. Folks, the first ever Nuketown Radioactive podcast contest will be coming up. It's probably going to be pretty simple. You know, the first couple of people to respond will get something for free. But that'll be next time. And next time will be sooner rather than later, because as soon as I hit stop on this podcast, that's right, folks, we're jumping into Nuketown Radioactive number 8. Talk to you soon. Bye.